I understand. One second, this doesn't go on. Okay, and Jack, you're recording too.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, yesterday was a doubleheader, but the second half you won't hear, at least not for the I made a farewell speech to Rabbi Prezansky. They're planning a big affair for him. And I gave, we'll see, Mark, how it plays in Teaneck. I gave them help to come in Aliyah, follow the rabbi, but we'll see. All right, we can begin. I have a world to do today. Today is February 3rd, 2020. And I say good morning to the students in front of me and to all those listening across the wide expanse of Jewish existence. And now Jack understands why these shirim are very hard for me. I'm being very honest, because these are two people that I love. The Rav is my Rebbe, Mufak, Sheli v'Shelo Shelohu, and I knew Rabbi Rachman intimately, the family. And I just want to say that this is Rabbi Rachman, you see. Our tragedy is that no research has been done at YU since that guy Rothkopf finished his work on Revel. And we're dealing with, Rabbi Revel died 1940. Figure out how many years we're dealing, 80 years later, and nothing has been done beyond Rabbi Revel. Whatever the reasons are, I spoke about it a few weeks ago, I unburdened myself, but kol korei bamidbar, no one is listening and no one cares about history. The truth of the matter is, most people laugh, Jewish history, what's it important, who gives a hoot, he'll do his dafyomi, but it doesn't go beyond it. All right, Baruch Hashem, he does a dafyomi, it's also an achievement. And the period has to be researched. But my understanding, and I say, Vic, my understanding, because the archives are in New York. A young man has to do a doctorate. I'm living in Israel when all this is happening, basically. But I was in America until 69, and I was on the faculty of Reitz. And I remember very well Rabbi Rachman. Rabbi Belkin needed help. His health already was fractured. The burden financially was overwhelming. And he needed help. And originally they spoke of Rabbi Mushwitz, who evidently was a fabulous individual. Rabbi Belkin felt very much at home with him. He was the maitre de son-in-law. But he did have a conservative temple in Hillcrest. The temple still stands. It's now, I don't know if there's a, probably there's something there, Shabbos, but I know during the week it's all, it's a yeshiva. It's rented out. It's the Bukharins have taken over the neighborhood, etc. And by the late 60s, mid-60s, you could not appoint a conservative rabbi to be Rabbi Belkin's assistant. So Rabbi Rachman became the assistant to the president. I am positive in Rabbi Rachman's mind he wanted to do more than just fundraise WIC. And it would be interesting to see the correspondence of that era. But he dead-ended. Rabbi Belkin was the president, Rosh Yeshiva, as far as a titular head. The Rav was really the spiritual head of the yeshiva. And Rabbi Rachman certainly felt a certain amount of frustration. Now, his One Man's Judaism appeared, I think the first edition, which neither Yitz or I have. We have the second edition. But the first edition appeared about 1970s. Already in that edition, if I can quote Rothkopf, who I remember I said at that time already, I said Rabbi Rachman walks on that line between left-wing Orthodox, right-wing conservative. Then the issue of Rabbi Rachman claiming afterwards he was citing Rabbi a professor alone, and the Rav attacks him publicly, it's a scary situation. Rabbi Rachman is a candidate for the presidency, and all this has to be researched. And in comes Chaim Soloveitchik carrying One Man's Judaism, and people told me, my own student who was on the committee told me, Chaim, the anecdote is he went through the book in one night. And in one night, which Chaim, it's no big deal. I mean, if you can go through a Homer Sechet in one night, he can certainly go through one man's Judaism. And he marked off, there were no highlighters yet, but he marked off quotes. And then he came in and he quoted what Rabbi Rachman said. And this is the man you will elect president, Rosh Yeshiva. So it nixed him. Rabbi Rachman then went on, like, by the way, with Pinchas Chorgan was the same story. Pinchas Chorgan under Rabbi Revel had a lot of authority in the greater yeshiva picture. When Rabbi Belkin took over, slowly but surely, Rabbi Belkin consolidated all the power into his two hands. And Pinchas Chorgan felt he didn't have power, and he ran away to Bar Ilan. They organized Bar Ilan, and there he was a king. So Rabbi Rachman at that point goes on to Bar Ilan. Now, what did he accomplish? Rabbi Rachman had great accomplishments. He built Shaarei Tefillah in Far Rockaway. Today, you take for granted the Five Towns is a bastion of Torah. At that time, there was absolutely nothing whatsoever. It was just a little humble beginning of Shemesh Shabbos Jews. Rabbi Rachman built Shaarei Tefillah. Then he took over Fifth Avenue Synagogue. Rabbi Jacobowitz goes on to become chief rabbi. And he built Bar Ilan. Of course, his main thrust in Bar Ilan was fundraising. In addition, he opened up the section that deals with women and women's problems, and that survives him until today. It's named in his memory. But there's no question that after the incident with Moriah Rebbe, the Rav, that he became more outspoken in his points of view. He published already in Jewish Week, and we'll see some of the reaction. Now, when it comes to Hafkat Kedushin, I can't go into it in detail. Lo Amoretz Anochi, just open up the fourth volume of Rakafet Aron. You can't read it, if I can quote Professor Tarikin, you can't read it on one foot. You got to sit down, be Iyun, and go through the sources. There is Hafkat Kedushin. What am I, an Amoretz, a Boor, a Neni, a Reichheit? Of course there's Hafkat Kedushin. There are about five different instances in the Gemara. But in the cases where there's Hafkat Kedushin, it's either Bishat Maisa, that the marriage never took place. In other words, who was Shachaloka Hogan? There's at the end of Yevamot, it's the famous case, I'll put it into modern terminology. A girl is standing under the chuppah with the chatan, about to marry him, Vic, and a helicopter lands and a guy jumps out, sent by, people who own the world and have money. Maybe his name is Trump, a Jewish Trump. There is a Rabbi Trump, actually, now in the Five Towns. So, and he grabs the girl and marries her with two Edom. No, Chazal said, what's this Lokogan? They do him on the spot. The Kedushin is not Chal. There are more examples in Bab, but you'll see it all in Rakafet Aaron. Then there are retroactive examples. In other words, 10, 20, 30 years later, he sends a get al yedei shliach, mevatel the get shelo bidit hashliach, either be, you'll see Tosfos there, either mevatel it in ton of two people, one person, whatever, takes his kavanah out, they get, she doesn't know. So there's retroactive annulment in the sense that the Rabbanim were makshir the get. And in all the cases where this retroactive, there was a get, there was a problem with the get. The Gemara in Ketuvot, Al Tanai, Shemi Yavo, Pasik Mavra, the Rabbanim were makshir. This is the way the Rishonim learn. And there is a tremendous amount of literature. So that when you quote Professor Menachem Alon, yes, there is Hafkat Kedushin, but it's limited. Who can do it? When can you do it? How can you do it? And it doesn't become a total solution. And the words of the Rav, let me tell you, irrefutable. It's like when it comes to Yontif Sheni, so Mori Rebbe told me that his father told him, my tata megezuk, and I'm from Reb Chaim, from Mein Zeda, So Reb Chaim said, I have not yet found a Chabnashkus gefun in any of us can fanfrin the Shilas was the Chacham Tzvi frak. The Chacham Tzvi is very powerful where he comes out that there was never a concept of Yantav Sheni in Eretz Yisrael. And we have all the literature in Chazal. People came from Bavel, etc. Our whole Tan, the Tain Talamater is Talui on the people coming from Bavel.
Second day Rosh Hashanah.
Yontif Sheni of the Regalim. Secondly, Rosh Hashanah is a different story. That's Safek Hayom with the Levium, with the Shira, that's an open Gemara. But so Reb Chaim, the same thing when the Rav said that if Professor Rachman, Rabbi Rachman is correct, why do we need two Prakim at the end of Yovamat? Why do we need over a million pages, a Beli Guzma, of Had the Raguna, all we have to do is be Mafki Kedushin. Okay, and Rabbi Rachman afterwards, look, we're all human beings. He was hurt. And he did publish some very sharp articles in Jewish Week, including what I showed you at the end of the shiur, where he again quotes Blue Greenberg. He quotes Blue Greenberg in the book. He quotes Blue Greenberg in this article. If there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way, etc. And that's a very, very sharp statement. He supports Jaffa, Jewish Orthodox Feminist Association. And again, you find the overtone in his writings, the disappointment in Rabbi Soloveitchik. You find it with him. You find it with Jit Greenberg. You find it with Lopez Cardoza. It's all over. He took us into the Western world, but he didn't really enable us to live in the Western world. And here you're touching upon the problem which we all struggle with at this very moment. Whether you're in Yeshiva University, Lakewood, Chabad, Ge'er, Bel, Satmar, And how many times, Yitzchak, how many times did we hear the Rav Dashin Ger V'toshev Anochi Imachem? Time and again. And where do you draw the line? What can we accept? What can't we accept? Dov, do me a favor. Give me the first pamphlet underneath the recording. And I'll show you something. My wife and I, thank you. We discussed this last night. It's literally... You gotta think about this. It's very, very moving. Very moving. It captures our world. I'm holding in front of me Torah Savigdah, Rav Avigdah Miller, right? We all know Rav Avigdah Miller. It's Rav Lessen's son-in-law, Mori Rebbe of my Mashkiach, Rav Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessen, whom I have smicha from in addition to the yeshiva. So you all know Rav Avigdah Miller was a terrific speaker. Go to page 11. And he's talking, it's on Pashat Bo and leaving Egypt and all that goes with it. You'd see it in Mitzrayim. And that's what happened. He's talking about Hamushim Alu B'nei Yisrael. That's what happened when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Jews out of Germany. Many of them didn't want to go. They loved Germany too much. I'll tell you the story once. I remember a case in my father-in-law's home in Lithuania. Who are we talking about now? Father-in-law, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessen, Rabbi Zakham, you knew him. Knew him, Rabbi. We have three people here who knew him very well. Okay? There was a Jewish couple that had escaped Hitler Germany. Now, Charlie, I will assume that if they're in Rabbi Lessen's house, this is a frum couple. Will you agree with me or not? All right, if you've studied Rabbi Professor Breuer's PhD thesis on the German community before World War I, you'll understand this very well. And he's writing about frum Jews. Mordechai Breuer, not the rabbi, but the professor. It's a fabulous, have you ever held that in? It's a fabulous work. It's I have the Hebrew. There's an English edition, I'm told, as well. They saved their lives and came across the border and settled for a little while in a Lithuanian town. It was December the 24th at night and they were sitting and listening to the radio broadcast. It was Erev Krapsmach, and the radio was broadcasting Krapsmach carols from Germany. And these two people were sitting, weeping tears of homesickness for their beloved Germany, where they always enjoyed listening to these carols in their home in Berlin. They escaped Hitler, but they were still straggling behind, homesick for their beloved homeland. Do you follow the depth of that? It's overwhelming. These are from Jews. These are from Jews. But this is my wife. We had such a Yitz knows Malka very well. We had a very serious discussion. Malka said to me, "It took her many years in Israel to not have any feeling for what would go on in New York from Thanksgiving on, the Christmas, the window, nothing to do with Jesus and belief." But it's in the air, it's in the atmosphere. Christmas carol, solid night, young Israel, Adon Olam, who has a good voice here? Well, you heard young Israel, was Adon Olam, sung to the tune of, like Lecha Dodi, Shabbat Chazon. What tune do we sing it to? The tune of Eicha. So here, and young, I remember this young Israel. All right, believe we're bringing someone here with a good voice. But you get the message. And this is the question. What can we accept? What can't we accept? And there's absolutely no black and white answer. All I can tell you is I grew up 20-minute walk to Yankee Stadium. Ribbono shel Olam, how many times I write about it in Washington. That you should know, I told you I was challenged because I wrote that two yeshiva boys, we'd look at who worked the gates, the turnstiles. These were retirees. And, you know, it was exciting. I don't know if they got paid, but they just enjoyed the thrill, the crowd. Then they probably could go watch the game. So we would look for a Jewish guy. And he would say, Mizayin Yeshiva Bach. Everyone spoke Yiddish. Mizayin Yeshiva Bachrim. Yeshiva Bachrim. Machashvai. Two of us push us under at the same time. So I got a letter. It's cheating. Instead of paying 60 cents, you're each getting in for 30 cents. So I said, it could be. I have to make a hakira that the turnstile guy had the right to let two kids in. From the Yankee point of view, it was a terrific investment. Now the kids are sitting in the bleachers. You hook them on baseball. In 10 years' time, they're going to be buying box seats. You follow? So from their point of view, but where do you draw the line? Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, when I eulogized Reb Aaron, I said he was the last person alive who could give you the starting lineup of the 1945 Chicago Cubs. You understand? That he grew up in Chicago. They were in the World Series, 45. You know what that meant to an 8-year-old? Reb Aaron in 45, let's see, was 13, 12 years old. When was Reb Aaron born? 33, Mashu, because so you know, a kid, he knew that starting lineup. We used to have talks about Phil Cavaretto, the Rabbi Scheinberg. You know, I read the famous story that Rakefa tells in the DiMaggio Hespit, and Normie Gold went over to Rav Scheinberg and said, Rebbe, you should listen to the DiMaggio Hespit. You're mentioned in it. The next day I give Rabbi Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg all the credit in the world. Normie goes to the Rosh Yeshiva, and there's some, every word that Rabbi Rakefet said is correct. He could have said, no, it's not me. And you know his part. He said, he comes out of his yeshiva and Mata stuff, and two American kids are talking, it was the Mets in 86, when the word, the Miracle Mets, 86, the World Series, and the kids are talking baseball. And Rav Scheinberg said, with all my years as a Rosh Yeshiva and all my years of learning, within minutes I was a kid again and I visualized the Dodgers in Brooklyn. You understand? So where do you draw the line? Reb Scheinberg had a son-in-law, Reb Chaim Altusky. He was a gon. He knew, forget about Shas and Paiskim. He knew every batting average of every player from the 30s into the 40s. You understand? Where do you draw the line? There's a Chaim Offer, Rabbi Chaim Offer from Queens. I think he's a Georgian, a Bukharin. He boasts how he takes away baseball cards from the kids and he burns them. He said, one kid, he took away $100 worth. I think he's crazy. You're a thief. The kid enjoys Zalazangazan. Smach Bachur, Bialdu Techa. I don't have to go further than the Mechitan. This is an absolute confirmed story. I heard it from people who were there. I hate to say how old I am. I heard it, but others confirmed. I heard this one, that one. The Mechita, he comes to the yeshiva. He lived in Williamsburg, and he came across and students were riding from Williamsburg, East Broadway. You know, YU, what became YU, Reitz was then basically the only show in town on an advanced level. So the Mechita comes. And it was a spring day, you know, after a miserable winter, it's a spring day. And the kids are playing ball in front of the yeshiva. And the Mechita looks and he says, was hab mir hab nicht gehabt, a Jugend. Ay, bei mir gekennt spielen, wenn gewend dieselbe Talmud Chachamim, mir mit gehabt, a Jugend Simcha. Why didn't we play ball in our youth? He said, I had no youth. He said, we would have been the same Talmid Chachamim today, and we would have had a joyful youth. And members of the Meshitah's family just told me very recently that all his life he suffered because his father never let him enjoy himself as a kid. But where do you draw the line? Okay, and now I want to come right in to the contemporary world and introduce you to a volume that is very impressive because it happens to be absolutely accurate. And this volume brings back a lot of unpleasant memories for me because I lived many of these events when they happened. The volume is called When Open Orthodoxy Is Not Orthodox. It's by David Rosenthal. I gather that David Rosenthal is a graduate of Ne'er Yisrael. Ne'er Yisrael is the closest that you have to land a college, I would say, is Ne'er Yisrael. A little, you know, and they're both close to YU, although YU is more to the left in the sense it's a more open curriculum. Lander College is more limited, as we've spoken about. And Ne'er Yisrael, they have arrangements with Johns Hopkins. It seems to me every Ne'er Yisrael graduate goes to college. 80% of them become lawyers. They translate, you know, the Gemara. The Gemara comes like a Dershowitz now. My vort yesterday, it's not a bad vort that I said. You don't know what I'm getting from America. Everyone's studying what's going on. But Dershowitz shocked them. A president can do whatever he wants to remain in power. So you know what I said yesterday? It's a miracle he didn't say, Morid Mamalchut Chayav Mita. Could you imagine? He would quote the Gemara and say, gentlemen, there's a source in the Talmud that a king immediately executes anyone who differs with him. The president has the right. Morid Mamalchut Chayav Mita. The Gemara that he learned is still within him. And it seems to me that in Baltimore, some of the graduates become medical doctors, but they have this arrangement with Johns Hopkins. But you know, I so far don't see too many professors of English literature, of Chinese literature coming out of Ne'er Yisrael and Johns Hopkins. But from YU, anything is possible. All right, now, in what happened was the, you might want to call it the slippery slope, if I'm pronouncing it correct. Last week I said the slopery slip. And I think the slopery slip sounds better, but I'll try to say it correctly. But correct me if I fall back into my own word. The slopery slip, you see, what began with Jaffa, what began with with Eida, which Rabbi Saul Berman, my classmate, who I spoke about at the OU Center. So ultimately, you have Rabbi Avi Weiss, who, again, these are people I know personally and tremendous affection for them. But Avi, Rabbi Avi Weiss, I don't have to tell you, we wind up now with a Chovivei Torah. We wind up with a calls it a seminary, I think. I don't think they called it a yeshiva for women as well, or maybe they do call it a yeshiva. And more than that, their students, their comments, you go one by one. And what's amazing about this book is every comment he quotes, he gives you the source. You can hear it. It's either an article or it's recorded on the internet. Now, I've raised issues years ago already. I have many students, you know, in the course of life you have, I have from the Eidah Charedit to Chovivei Torah and beyond. And so I have students in Chovivei Torah, I've raised issues, they double talk me. Ultimately they'll tell you, well, this is not the official policy of the institution. But I will always answer, why you, Mismachim, don't speak this way? In other words, it may not be the official policy, but you go one by one by one by one by one, and before you know it, you have 30, 40 quotes which go way beyond, or halacha lemaisa, show you where it all begins. If there's a rabbinic will, there is a halachic way. Now, one of the issues that came up in... who are you looking for? Welcome, sit down. One of the issues that came up in Chovivei Torah is biblical criticism. Biblical criticism, I've told you more than once, I had the privilege of knowing Professor Yeshaya Leibowitz and knowing Nechama Leibowitz very close. We taught together many, many years, decades. And Nechama once said to me, I differ with my brother on many topics, but on one topic we're totally in agreement. Biblical criticism is sheer anti-Semitism. And if you'll notice Nechama's lectures, her published writings, she will never give credence to biblical criticism. She will quote non-Jews. She will try to understand the word, a concept, an ancient language, but she will not give credence to biblical criticism. Here you have a Rabbi Zeb Farber, a yeshiva Chovivei Torah graduate, 2006, and I quote, the simplest explanation for these differences between the accounts in Exodus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy is that they were penned by at least two different authors with different conceptions of the desert experience. Okay, and here you have the opening key to biblical criticism. Have any of you ever studied the Holiness Code, the different authors, the differences between the Leviticus, Rabbi Rubin, with the Professor Zeitlin? Did he touch upon this? Where did he stand? He didn't touch biblical.
Did we dealt with Talmud?
Talmud. So you should know that Louis Ginsberg, who I don't have to tell you, Louis Ginsberg was the Vilna Gaon's great-great-great nephew, was a Gaon, our dear photographic memory, tells Yeshiva boy, the stories about him in his youth. Remember I told you his mother came to visit him during during Chodesh Elul. He wouldn't talk to her, remember? He was in a tiny dibur, his mother comes to visit. So you should know, at a certain point in his life, he did follow biblical criticism. Later in life, he regretted it. If you read his biography by his son, so you'll see that there was a shift later. It's interesting, Zeitlin too, they were able to engage in Talmudic criticism, but not biblical. And here, all right, this is one quote, not the end of the world. Here's one of their famous graduates, Chovivei Torah 2010, Rabbi Shmuel Yanklovich. Remember I checked out if he's related to my Rebbe, Reb Gershon Yanklovich, Shanghai survivor, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. So I was told no. He has a very similar name. It is the same name, Yanklovich, but they're not related. And my teacher, Rabbi Dr. Nathan Lopez Cardoza, Now, you write to one, my teacher, that Nathan Lopez Cardoza, right? This is someone I know very well. And this is one of the stories when you were educated in the Haredi world and you leave the past, there's anger. I saw it with Paz Cardoza, I saw it with Duvi Hartman. Remember, Duvi Hartman is why you only get one quarter of the blame for Duvi Hartman. Elementary school Chabad, high school Chaim Berlin, the real influence, Lakewood, Rabbi Cutler. That's how I wound up in Lakewood. I have to be honest with you. I read Washington. I tell the truth. Duvi Hartman, what an influence on me. Again, it's a different lifetime. I remember when the Chazon Ish died. I described this in Washington. The Chazon Ish died. He came into the base, medrash, hysterical, rip kriya, and sit down on the floor. And we said, Duvi, what happened? Chazon Ish died. All right. This shows you where Duvi was at. And I don't say I ripped kriya, but we sure sat down on the floor. But there was a certain bitterness there. I've met people who went off the path from YU. There's no bitterness. That I'm not happy with them, I'm not happy. That I told them off. That they cried when I spoke. This is recent, but past too. Rav Rakefit, you opened our hearts again. You opened our hearts again. You reminded me of my days in the yeshiva. Then I met their wives. I understood already where they're at in life. But here, Lopez Cardoza, there's a certain bitterness. My teacher, Rabbi Dr. Nathan Lopez Cardoza, once again hits a grand slam. A grand slam, he's missing one word here. A grand slam home run, Yitzchak, you understand? Reminding us to get our priorities straight as we approach Tisha B'Av. And then he quotes his Rebbe. Whether or not the temple will be rebuilt is not our concern, nor is it our dream. It is of little importance. What we dream of is the day when we will be able to transform ourselves and reconstruct the temple's message within our hearts. Yitzchak, what does that remind you of? Word by word, 1885. Word. Give it to me. Pittsburgh word. Platform. Exactly. Rebbeinu Shalom. But I know Rabbi Lopez Cardoza. He came out a few years ago with a whole article. We have to reconstruct Chazal, that the way we paskin. You understand? Again, I haven't wasted my time since 1978 on. I have not repeated a sham the kolel. Gentlemen, on Sunday, it's the real McCoy. Today, you're just hearing jokes. Sunday, Shas, Paiskin, and Shalep, and Shuvit. It's the world. Yesterday, you should have been here. Today, you come to hear the jokes. I don't think that's nice. But anyway, be it as it may, he wanted the whole halachic system. Of course, when you, Mori Yurebi, Rav Soloveitchik, time and again, you learn Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, Abaye and Rava, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, it's the same schatz, the same Torah Shebaal Peh. But if you paskin against the maskan of the Gemara, you're an apikairis, plain and simple. Listen to what I just said. Look at the Rambam, Hakdama to Mishneh Torah. If you don't know Hakdama of the Mishneh Torah by heart, you're going to be an Amoritz all your life. Without understanding that Hakdama, you don't know how to breathe there. And that's the secret of hitgapshut, of crystallization, of the whole halachic process. It's what new Lopez Cardoza comes out. We have to repaskim. We have to rechange. We're going to attract the you. Rebbeinu Shalom, if you, it makes a big difference to the kid growing up in Hod HaSharon or the kid growing up in North Tel Aviv, whether we paskim like Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai, or like Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Abaya, or Rava, Gateman and Levin, do you understand? But this is Lopez Cardoza, but this is very, very frightening.
See,
100%. His wife wears a shetel, and he says Shomer Shabbos, and he's Shomer Kashrut, 100%. But he's also angry at the Rav. He never met the Rav. I don't believe he ever met the Rav. He's too young to have ever met the Rav, and he grew up in London, in Gateshead, from a different world, Holland. He studied in Gateshead, I believe. From Gateshead, he came to Israel. I don't know if he studied in Mir or Hebron, Panovich here, but... He never met the Rav, but he reads the Rav. Like, that's what I told you a few months already when I hit upon this topic in the history of Torah in the United States. The Rav whet their appetite. Remember you said to me, Rebbe, why are you so upset to give these lectures? Because I have to use whet. This is what new. I read to you, Rabbi Rachman. What words did he use? The Rav whet our appetite. But there's a border. There's Torah. Gevetoshev, this is the challenge that we all face. A ger chassid, you all know my joy in it, became a medical doctor, the story of this kid. Mark, you were not here, you were in Teaneck. God, why do people have to run around and make money already? At your age, you should say to your wife, Ad Khan, and move to Yerushalayim like Morty did with his wife and get in all the good Sheurim. And then you'll say to Abba Branspiegel, your Rebbe, my Chaver, I turned my life into a golden path. But wow. What did I start to say before I gave Musa? What? Lopez Cardoza, Charlie, what was the connecting link? Lopez Cardoza and
I... He was mad at the Rav.
Yeah. So you see, that's the question. What can you take? What can't you take? All right, now watch. Yitzchak, what did you want to say?
No, I wanted to ask if he was a firm Jew.
100%, 100%. Orthoprax, 100%. Then you have here, I'm going page by page. This book is well documented. Rabbi Yosef Kanevsky. Oh, God. Can you tell me who Rabbi Yosef Kanevsky is? Talmud of Aaron Rakefet, right here in this kollel. Early 80s. Rabbi David Miller, Zalazayin Gesund, the Rosh Kollel, he never met Rabbi. Why? He was in America. He was in Cleveland. If my memory is correct, you have to take with Rabbi David. He went to America for 1 or 2 years. His wife had to get a master's, whatever it was. So he never met Rabbi Kanevsky. He said, he was in the kollel. He was in the kollel. Very bright individual. Tremendous career in the rabbinate out in Los Angeles. I remember this quote when it happened that I almost had a conniption. An orphan, he's talking about women, an orphan, she must content herself with davening in a cage in shul from where her desire to say Kaddish for a parent may or may not be tolerated. Eti, I want to ask you a question. In your father's shul, did you daven in a cage or behind the mechitza? Tell me what there was.
There was separate seating without a mechitza when they moved into the new shul. My father almost didn't go.
The original shul had a balcony.
The original shul had a balcony. This is very, very hush of a family. The Rosenzweig, if you know, one of the great Gonim that YU turned out, that's her first cousin, that young lady's first cousin. So, did you sit in a cage? When you went to Jack's shul in Toronto, or the fancy shul, was there a cage for women?
There was a balcony.
A balcony. Rebbeinu Shlom, how can you write this? It's beyond my comprehension. But this is one of the big supporters, and he slapped, this face was slapped in Los Angeles by my own Talmud when I criticized it. Oh, my God. Rabbi Zev Farmer, now we're dealing with homosexuality. I believe we must come to terms with the fact that in the long run, Orthodox homosexual Jews really have no choice but to allow themselves to fulfill the intense desire for emotional and physical intimacy in the only way open to them. My dear students, let me talk about homosexuality, lesbianism. I've lived, I'm a Nimodel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, 61 years of teaching Torah. I've been in the thick of it, wow. Tens of Torah, I mean, you know how much I've taught. The classroom, at least over 11,000. The Israeli army, you can't, thousands upon thousands. Russia, behind the Iron Curtain. Australia, South Africa, Canada, coast to coast, America. It was the younger ones. Of course you come across homosexuality. You know when it's inborn. Go online and check all the research. Animal kingdom, humans. It's less than 2% of the population where it's inborn, where there's really a problem. Generally speaking, I've had about 5 problems in my years of teaching, maybe 6. 5.5 were certainly psychological, emotional, nothing to do with an inborn trait. You want an example? It's very simple. And I can use the name because the New York Times, they went public when the Yediot Ahronot came up with the story. They didn't use names. 10, 15 years later, the New York Times, the girl allowed her name to be used. One of the greatest tragedies that I have been part of, Malka and I, in our life. When we went to Russia and came back the first time, we were shell-shocked. And in addition to starting to work for the Mossad from that point, I helped organize Shvut Ami. Shvut Ami, outreach to Russians, outreach in the Russian language, etc. A long history of what Shvut Ami accomplished, publications in Russian. I myself published in Russian Kol Dovido Fake, the Rav's masterpiece, Al HaTshuva, the Rav's masterpiece on Yom HaNorayim. We published endless volumes. All right, it's the Litvish work. Excuse me?
Published in Russia,
Eliezer. There's no end, but this is Shvut Ami itself. I mean, this we distribute. Shvut Ami, we publish endless volumes. Rabbi Norman Lamb, Hedge of Roses, we published that. That was a bestseller. We went through 5 different printings. And one of the families that I bonded with in America, it was a very, very famous name, the Kab family, K-A-B, Kabba Kab. Recognize the name? And if you're a Chabadnik, you'll recognize the name. Zeishtan from Chabadnikim Dore Doret. The great, great, great grandfather was the Rebbe's Shaliach in Minsk. And like everything else, they became assimilated in America, and the next generation came back. And that's the tragic story. They turned to Rabbi Riskin, they enrolled their kids in day school, and they asked him to send a tutor. And that tutor, she was a young lady, Sarah, 13, 14 years old, statutory rape. She confided in her sister, Lori, who later becomes a dear student of mine, of what was happening to her. Now, what are the results 40 years later? Sarah left religion, married a guy first time around. I don't know what happened second time around. You can understand that. The older sister became a lesbian. Tell me, and she's today the head of the so-called Orthodox lesbians, and she's a Shemeret Shabbat 100%. Tell me, is that inborn? Or is that a result of life experience? So you see, you're dealing here with a terrible challenge. And there's, in my humble opinion, only one approach. And that approach is we have to accept the sinner, but we cannot make the sin normative. And once you make the sin normative, endless people jump out of the closet, Yotzim min haron, bi'ivrit min duberet. Why? They have problems, psychological, financial, emotional. God have mercy. And here you take this attitude, Rabbi Zev Farber, and you give it a credence of normalcy, normative behavior. Look what happened in Israel a few weeks ago when one of the Maftal people, what formerly was Maftal, Rabbi Peretz, who is only a brigadier general in the army. He was the chief rabbi. He was a helicopter pilot. You know what we're talking about. And they asked him, how would you feel if your children were homosexuals or lesbians? And he said, I raised my children in a normal fashion. And was he attacked here by the liberals, by the leftists? You might say that he declared that every homosexual, you should take him out and stone him and kill him and shoot him and destroy him. God, he only said, I raised my children, Baruch Hashem, in a normative fashion. This is an unbelievable challenge. And when you start speaking, it's inborn. They can't help themselves. Well, you talk about inborn. Some people are inborn with terrible tempers. Ribbono shel Olam, do I have to tell you anything further about my Rebbe? Where he talks about himself? We saw what in the 50s, his temper, they say in the 50s already, he was better than in the 40s. And Dov is looking at me, he doesn't know what I'm talking about. He studied with the Rav in the 70s. The Rav already was a Zaydi. The old-time Talmidim, his own son, in the movie that I was privileged to bring into the world, the documentary on the Rav, his own son, Rav Chaim, my classmate, said, since when does my father tolerate such nonsense? Some kid said a svar. If he would have said that svar in the 50s, the Rebbe would have chopped his head off. In the 70s, you follow me, Dov? You're born with a temper. My father had quite a temper. I worked very hard. You can cure things. All right, I don't want to go further. But when you make it normative, no one is interested in curing anything. You have to not only accept me, validate me. How dare you say this is not normative? Two men, two women, you know what they have in Tel Aviv? In some of the Ganei Yeladim, Ima Shel Shabbat, Abba Shel Shabbat. One of my great grandsons a few weeks ago was Abba Shel Shabbat. He called me so excited. Can I inherit in Yerushalayim? In Tel Aviv, you have two girls. One is the mother, father, whatever they call them. Next week, two men. The third week, a man and a woman. We got to teach this Rabbi Peretz or this moron Rakefet. You don't know what life is about. Bigoted. God have mercy. It's the end of the world. You understand? Why was there a flood? Look into Chazal. Decadent behavior like this. And here you see Rabbi Zephon, not enough. Rabbi Dov Linzer, the Rosh Yeshiva's first cousin, was one of my greatest Talmidim in the Kollel in the 80s. Rabbi Dov Linzer, Talmud Chacham, they tell me, from a wonderful family. This is one of the most challenging religious and halachic questions that we are facing today. And I think that our focus has to be non-halacha, but on communal acceptance and on making gay men and women and their spouses or partners, as well as their children, fully welcome and fully part of our communities, synagogues, and schools. All right, if we go with that approach, we're undermining the human race. Don't want to say a word about what's happening in China, but if any of you have ever visited China, Shem Yirachem, on every street corner, Eva Min HaChai. Have you seen it? All right, let's not say another word. Let's hope we're totally incorrect, but Ribbono Shel Olam brings a makkah to the world. You have to sit down and be chayzer b'tshuva. Look into the Rambam, Hilchot Tshuva, look into the Gemara. Rabbi Yisachar Katz, chair of the Department of Talmud and director of the Lindenbaum Center for Halachic Studies at Yeshivat Chovevei Torah. And this Rabbi Yisachar Katz, I'm told, knew, you know anything about him, Yitzchak? You didn't read his biography? He's a big Talmud Chachman, a Satmar. His uncle was Satmar of Beitin. Ah, what he comes from. Yeah. The Torah makes clear that relations between two men is prohibited. But I'd like to talk about the 50 shades of gay. In other words, There are many other things they can do that are not expressly prohibitive. And very sad. Another quote about the Kohen from Rabbi Yisachar Katz: they shall not marry a prostitute or a woman has been defiled, neither shall they marry a woman divorced from her husband, for the priest is holy to his God. And he goes on, how can we ostracize these women? Why do we call them a prostitute? Why do we call them a zonah? The fact that these divorcees are sometimes our sisters, moms, daughters, or ourselves, he's divorced, I understand, makes the insult all the more painful. Eli, Eli, lama azaftani. And I have to tell you, and I've said this 1,000 times over the last 61 years of teaching Torah, the word zonah in the context of the priestly prohibition has nothing to do with prostitution. A zonah is a chalei shem of a woman who lived with a non-Jew, with a Gentile. That's all. Zonah doesn't mean a prostitute in that sense. But a kohen who represents sanctity and kedusha has these prohibitions that he cannot live with these type of women. It's his kedusha. But it's not an affront to the woman that we're putting her down because she happens to be a divorcee, or with the Bala Tshuva, how many shaylas we have, how much has been asked, written, spoken about. You're a rabbi in America, you have Bala Tshuva in your kehila, they become frum, Chabad picks them up in college, after college, they become frum perhaps 100 different ways when they're more mature, and then they're marrying and you're filling in the ketuvah, and here you have a kohen, and this girl was in a normal college campus. I don't want to mouth it with my lips what the shaila is, but you can be practically absolutely certain she was with non-Jews. No, you ever think of that, Dov? No wonder you ran away from the rabbinate. But this, all right, lo machzikin isura, we try our best. Zelo pashut. But let me go further. You'll see one by one what we're up against, what has happened, what the struggle is, what the challenge is. And there's no black and white solution. Each one of us. He quotes Chovevei, the faculty, the students. No, he doesn't go into Dubi, but it's very, very fascinating. Here in 2011, I'm beginning on page 170, Rabbi Sarah Horowitz, this is one of the early graduates, was interviewed by Reform Rabbi Mark Gallup on Shalom TV. Now, what is Shalom TV? I would imagine it's a cable. Am I right? Okay, Josh says I'm right. A cable TV that centers on Jewish topics. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Olam she'hakol nehyeh
bedvarav. We have it on YouTube too. Probably watch episodes on YouTube too.
What?
Probably watch episodes sometimes on YouTube as well.
Okay. YouTube is, everything is on YouTube. I don't watch television. If everyone is, there was a terrific 3-part series here on the Hasidic world. Did you see it, Yitzchak?
I couldn't find it.
It's on YouTube.
I tried. It's called, I wrote it down.
I don't.
Apart.
No. That's on Borough Park 20 years ago. That's a different. No. This is Israeli television. Type in Bells. Go to Google. Go to Harav Hagaon Google and type in Bells and see what you come up with. Anyway, it's just done. What's it called? Malkiyot Shamata. I told the class. I tell you, it's worth watching. It is so powerful, so sensitive, so insightful. And you can get everything on YouTube. YouTube is a gift to the world. Type into Lubavitcher Rebbe and you have to take off 7 years to watch everything that will come up on the Rebbe. And people tell me, they see my Sherman Youth. I say, what are you talking about? So it seems like the OU share, people ask me, can they record me? I said, you can record me. I said, I'm responsible for every word I say. You can record me, whatever you want. I didn't realize they meant they're not just recording me. Like yesterday, they videoed me. And then they put it up on YouTube, to watch Rakefet Habach Nishzeit. I don't have time to waste. But to watch on it was beautifully done. Okay. Now, so this lady is interviewed. Now, I want to tell you something. These women are very spiritual and very sensitive. They're not to be laughed at. Our problem is that halavai, the Rav, would be here, and they could hear the Rav teach. It would have an impact. But the Rav is not here. The Lubavitcher Rebbe is not here. These are very sensitive people. I don't want... But... In their minds already, they don't realize they've crossed the border. Ger v'tosha v'nachi imachem, and they've been influenced, the woman in a cage. And here, the person interviewing him, interviewing her, says to her, you're championing the cause of women, but you claim you're Orthodox. You haven't gone far enough. Why not join the reformer conservative movement where women are completely equal members of the rabbinate? And the Sarah Horowitz answers, she says she loves the Orthodox community, she's a traditionalist, and then she comments, I take halacha very seriously, I grapple with it, I struggle with it, but I don't negate it, and I don't want to get rid of it. And I think that if halacha does change to allow women to be on a beit din, it's not going to be Sarah Horowitz making that change. It's going to take many more years of serious thought and tshuvah responsa written by those who are even more great in learning, gedolim in learning than we are. And they will be able to make these changes. So you see, you hear these words, this is a reflection of Rabbi Rachman's thinking. It's a reflection of Blue Greenberg. Ultimately, when there's a rabbinic will, there will be a halachic way. May I quote the Rav to you again? When we come up against the halachic wall, we just have to turn away and start all over again. There is no way in the world that we can be mater, a kohen to a giyoret, a kohen to a grusha. Rabbi Hartman, his latest book, put out by his students, recordings, the kohen comes to him in Montreal, Rabbi, I'm in love, marrying, thank God, but she's a grusha, will you perform the wedding? Personal happiness comes before the halacha. Not only will I perform the wedding, Davi says, take every Kohen who wants to marry a grusha or a convert, and I'll be happy to perform the wedding. Well, is it a divine system or isn't it? If halach is divine, if there's Kabbalah, Tom, Malchut Shemayim, if there's Matan Torah, Maimon HaSinai, Naseh Nishma, we are limited. We can be the greatest minds in the world. But Shabbat is Shabbat, Kashrut is Kashrut, Tarat HaMishpacha, family purity, family lineage, has to remain pure, Torahdik. God have mercy when we start to crack the wall. And this is what I explained to Yitzchak yesterday. When you get involved, what Rabbi Rachman quotes, the Malamed Lahoyel, Reb David Zvi Hoffman, it's not that he found a solution to a Kohen, to a Giyoret. It was under the circumstances he told them how to minimize the prohibition. You have to read the tshuva. Not to marry, to get married civilly, not halachically. And that takes us into the whole question. Look, this problem comes up time and time again. I know the Rav had it many times, and in the rabbinate I saw it, I felt it, I've been asked. People marry, live happily, suddenly midlife, they hear a rabbi speak, their whole life changes. All right, I can give you living examples. Abe Levovitz, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Abe told me this, these years, heard it from Abe. He was a businessman. It's Rabbi Ruchem Levovitz's nephew. It's Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's nephew. Abe Levovitz. His father was a rav in Brooklyn. He gave me the $1 million to put out the Lonely Man of Faith. I've told you more than once, I'm greatly in debt to him. Yiddish Tzadik. And he told me in the 60s, he heard the Rav speak. Heard the Rav speak, and he came home and he told his wife, that's it, honey. We're moving from Jersey to Massachusetts, to Boston. I want to be near this man. I want to be near this man. And he became, you know, he's a very wealthy guy. He was a businessman. I was told that in Boston there wasn't a big business deal that he wasn't involved with. But his time was his own. He drove the Rav around. He recorded the Rav. And this happens in life. So when what happens with Abe Levovitz, you don't have a problem. But what do you do when it's a Kohen married to a Giyorit, a Kohen married to a Grusha? And later in life, they become Balei Tshuva. There were many problems. By the way, in Tinek, there were problems like this. They went to the Rav. The Rav told them to accept the children, educate the children. Children halalim. Never told the husband and wife to get divorced. You follow? It's a certain reality. Halachically, yes, I had the problem in Maplewood. Don't ask what I had as a youngster. Today, I have a little seichel. I'm older. Ellie, we're going to buy him a clock that has the magic alarm in it. Oh my gosh. Oh, to miss a shiur like this and not to be able to tell it over to your grandfather and get involved. He might agree with me or might beat the heck out of me, but it'd be a lot of fun coming back here. These are real serious problems. The line, the wall, the surrender, Naseven Nishma. And this is the heart of the problem. And it goes on and on. And what she says is beautiful. She takes halacha seriously. I grapple with it. But she's waiting for the rabbis to come along. There's no way they're going to be able to work out a solution. This is a halacha in the Torah, period. The Melamed Lahoel, yes, Rabbi Gurin quoted the Melamed Lahoel. What's interesting is, and I lived it because I was here, and I knew what was going on in America, and many Holzer, kept me informed, Rabbi Holzer, the Rav's right hand in New York, and the Rav, he was hysterical. I have it on tape at the Yarchei Kala, and they tell me, a rabbi, I think I quoted in the Rav, my work, and they tell me a rabbi in Israel said he has a source, there's a responsum to permit a Kohen to marry a Giyorat, he says. Impossible. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, they told the same thing. He said, can't be. Impossible. I don't have the Melamed Lahoel Rabbi Moshe's truth. He said, Hasef Hazenu Tachet Yadi. But he wouldn't even look at that. What was the big deal? All he had to send us is Reb David or Reb Reuven around the corner to Altsas from to Yankele Goldman, Yankele, the Tatavil Zena Melamed Lahoel. In 1 minute, Reb Moshe would have had it. He didn't want to look. It can't be. It can't be. All right. These are questions where a rabbi has to evaluate. I had it in Maplewood. That's what I started to tell you. How did Beth Ephraim come to be? Do you know the story? The story is very simple. This was an area, suburban Essex County, totally reformed conservative, the biggest reformed temples, the biggest conservative temples in the world, the most famous non-rabbi rabbis were in Essex County. So every kid who grew up in Newark became reformed conservative today. The only ones that are still Jewish are those that are Sameach picked up, Chabad picked up. I can tell you stories. Outside of that, they're not even Jewish today, the fourth, fifth generation, Gutzalah Pitten. So how suddenly you have you want to build an Orthodox shul? So there was a medical doctor who, and it was public knowledge, His father was a sheikhet, a yidat tzaddik, but the kids were Americanish kinder of that period, the 1910s, the 1920s. And this medical doctor married a giyoret, and he was a kohen, broke his father's heart. Midlife, the son woke up, became a bal tshuva, a shema shabbos, 100%, shema kashrit, he, his brother, and they want to build the shul, and they turn to YU, and YU sends a guy named Rothkopf, and they build the first Orthodox shul, suburban Essex County. Shul thrives today. Kanayin Hara, mikveh, I showed you, mikveh, state-of-the-art mikveh, Erev, etc. Knew he was a Kohen married to a Giyaret. Yitzchak, this man is the president, this man built the shul, this man raises the money. Can he duchen? What I went through. Gutzalapitin. And the politics, the balabantim, you know, not so much l'shem shemayim, but to give him a kvetch a little bit. Of course he can't duchen. Was I caught in the quagmire? But there's no solution. Personal happiness is wonderful as long as it doesn't conflict with the Baruch Hashem Zu Halacha.
Did
you ask the Rav? No, there's nothing to ask the Rav. Duchen, he couldn't duchen. The question was how to do it in a way that wouldn't offend him too much. I'll tell you who I worked with. His original rabbi, Zeb Siegel. Got it? So we worked quite. It was a very unhappy situation. Thank God, duchening in Chutz Laritz only takes place a few times a year. Shlosh Golem and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Here in Israel, I need not tell you, Baruch Hashem in Yerushalayim every day. Do I rush? I always finish the silent Shmoneh Esrei 1 second before the Kohen starts the bracha Baruch Atah. Be ahava, underlined the word ahava. Right, God, you remind me in my shul, old Rivka, a guy came in Aliyah from America. Why you graduate out of the 40s? Big Londons, kids all in Lakewood. But if they ever said a bad word about the Rav, he'd beat the heck out of them. And this guy got involved in machlokes. I don't know what it was in the shul. Old time shul Jews, machlokes. And he's Ba'ahava, Bichat Kahanim, his name was Kohn, Zichrono Levracha, and one of the Balabatim says to him, you are not allowed Levareich because you don't have Ahava. You follow? Ahava. And by the way, a lot has been written on that. If a Kohen does, Taka has a feeling, he has to inculcate a feeling of Ahava. And here, she goes further. And Rabbi Golub comments that many, this is the Reform Rabbi interviewing her, that many Orthodox Jews in Israel find it offensive that some women wear tefillin at the Western world. Horowitz responds, you know, power is knowledge, and there is no halacha against women putting on tefillin and Hollis. And you see, you're getting involved now. The women of the wall, they sneak in this last British Chodesh. They snuck in a little Sefer Torah. I don't know, they held it under their apron or something. And they lay in, the women lay in, and they're not doing anymore. At one point, they set up a tefillin stand for women to put on tefillin. This is part of the Western world. The Western world is telling us men and women are one and the same. Mark, where do you have it in the headlines here? How are you sitting here now? We're sitting. How am I sitting here now? Because a few hundred thousand young men and women are wearing the garb of the IDF. You understand? I have a grandson now in officer's training. I have my first career officer grandson. So also happened to be a tremendous lamdan and a balkore and everything else that goes with it, and his wife is a tzaddikit. But he's in officer's training right now, right as we speak. As we speak. No? What's going on with the tank corps? The Mishigayim here, the Western world, men and women are equal. Did you see the paper, the weekend papers, the research, the army? They're trying to hide it from the public. The tank corps, when women are loading the missiles, I've had many, the rockets, whatever they're called. What are you calling it?
Shells.
Shells, no, there's much more to shells when my time, little shells, God. Today it's literally rockets. You should see the size. A shell you can load at your age. You're celebrating half a century today. He has a wonderful wife. She gave him a birthday gift to come to Israel, just to come to Rakefetz Tushayrim Sunday, Monday. I salute that young lady, Annie. Anyway, coming back here, the army shows it takes the women twice as long. And how do you run an army? What are you running an army for? What is this, a freak show? Without the proper army, we can't sit here. We're finished. But this is the mentality, and you have no idea what a fight is going on. Forget about it, Sneers. You're putting a chayelet and a chayal into one tank? So there's a tremendous outcry. So the new chief of staff, Hatta Bissel Mer Seichel, than the previous one, who was a yeshiva boy who threw it all away. By the way, the head of the Kachol Avon, Gantz, is Satmar Chosid from the house, from Munkach. Satmar, all his relatives are in Kiyat Yoel. We have this kind of mazel. What can we do? We fail in chinuch. There are reasons why. Mark, men and women are equal. Men and women are equal? Yes. Men and women both have a divine soul. But each one represents a different part of the glorious creation. There's a feminine mystique and there's a masculine gestalt. And this is very serious now. A lot of outcry because on everything it showed, they couldn't lift it. And when they finally lifted it, it took twice as long to get it into the gun. Okay? And this is what they're hitting at. Men and women, equal. Then he asks, again, with talis and tefillin, and not in the maritz. Yes, if a woman wants to put on tefillin, we're not happy about it. It affects the feminine gestalt. Absolutely. Quietly, no public display, modestly. What are we talking about here? At the Kotel. And then you have the other part, there's a certain reality to life which the Supreme Court should learn to consider. The American Supreme Court has learned this. There's a social reality. You're going to have women putting on tefillin at the Kotel and put up a tefillin stand. You have every day thousands upon thousands of Haredim and Chardalim coming to the Kotel. They didn't study in Yeshiva University. They're not broad-minded enough. What are you upsetting the apple cart? Ribbono shel Olam. A little modesty, sneers. Still a hate. You want to daven, daven. But here she's showing her lumdus around. It's a miracle she didn't quote the daughters of Rashi here, you know. Did they put on tefillin? Didn't they put on tefillin, etc.? The maid of Ludmir, the Siddiq Rebbe, Rebbetzin, we should say, you're aware of that or not, came in Aliyah, Mamish. The bells of Rebbetzin of today accepts Kvitlach, Fiatatish, Shirayim. No, where do you stand? They're great women, but there's a certain gestalt to women. Then they asked her about the aguna. It's such a painful issue seeing women who are suffering, seeing families who are suffering because they're going through so much turmoil and added stress and tension of Jewish law being structured in the way that it really seems to be against women. It's the old issue. A man can have 18 wives, we'll say, like a king. And a woman, one husband. There are reasons why, but it's not for now. But look what she says here. Here she claims she's lamdanit. And here I'm quoting her. The irony is originally when the Get idea was orchestrated by the rabbis on the Talmud, it was meant to protect women, but it had the side effect that if a woman refuses to give his wife the Get, they are chained. Tell me, did the rabbis invent the Get, or is it an open pasuk in the Torah? As far as I know, right in Devarim, Ki Teitzeg, open pasuk. And then he asks Rabbi Emanuel Rachman's solution. And where do you stand on that? And Horowitz responds, I think you have to start somewhere. And I think it would be a step in the right direction if there was a small group of rabbis sitting on a beit din and resolving the problem in the way Rabbi Rachman suggests. And, of course, this is the heart of the issue. And in his volume, the author quotes Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik vehemently opposed these reforms. Ignoring this opposition, Rabbi Asher Lopatin, who is Rabbi Asher Lopatin? My greatest student from the early 90s in this kollel. Before he came here and studied with us, he carried Reb Aaron Soloveitchik on his hands. That's how devoted he was to Reb Aaron, who was crippled already. Lo aleinu. Asher Lopatin. Then he becomes president. Now he's, I think, in Detroit. He left the presidency. Rabbi Asher Lopatin has also called for a supercharged Rachman model. Wow. The audacity of allowing a woman to remarry without a get, a halachic divorce, which could result in adultery and illegitimate children, is no less than breathtaking. And to support such a venture, despite the opposition of recognized Gedolei Torah on settling, to say the least. And this is the heart of the issue. And then, let me end off this part. They come to the heart of the issue. Jack, you davened this morning?
A little bit.
You said in the Shtiblach, Shelo Asani Isha? Nobody is perfect. I don't think your wife is too acceptive. My wife is very happy that I say it. Oh boy, she's overjoyed. Who needs all your mitzvot, all your, my God, you know what it means? I don't want to boast, but I don't think I've missed the minion of Shachris. Wow. On to 70 years. Mincha Maariv also pretty close. The only time I missed was in communist Russia when I was in areas where there was no minyan. But when I taught later in the day, I'll tell you, B'didi HaViyuvda, I would say a Kaddish Rabbanan and a Baruch Hu. And people came over me and told me it was the first time in their lives they saw someone davening to an unknown, to someone they couldn't touch. You got to remember, all over coming, I'll take you on the streets of Moscow, Leningrad, 1980s, on every street there was a Getchka. On every house, Lenin's picture. I have a Getchka of Lenin's face in my, I showed it to a good Jew. He thought it was a rabbi because he had a little beard. I said, you're a good Jew, you've done lekapschut. But Lenin, wherever you went, they never, you know, you worshipped the communist regime, the communist system, but it was tangible. Right, Yitzchak, right or wrong, the big posters. In the Vakafaran Chelik Dagla, I reproduce one of these posters. I think also it could be in Washington, I have one of those posters. Posters, wow. A Jew says, Baruch Hu, and bows. So it was something revolutionary for them. Ah, all right. So here, Rabbi Sarah Horowitz, Rabbi Konevsky, a disgrace to say a bracha for not having made me a woman. And Rabbi Asher Lopatin, my dear student, encourages the removal of this blessing. And he gives you the source. Rabbi Zeb Farber calls the synagogue an all-male club, like the popular cartoon, The Flintstones. How many of you have seen The Flintstones? Showed it to your children. The Flintstones. What's the club called when they put on those beaver hats and strimals? They put on strimals and they have their all-male club. We're in Dar El Asher. That's what a shul is about. Here, Rabbi Zeb Farber, women are in a second-class position of women in the synagogue. And wow. And here's a woman, Rabbi Maharat Rachel Cole Feingold, class of 2013. She feels that women feel the synagogue is not an inviting place for them. Many women cannot comfortably sing in the musical key chosen by the chazan. You understand that? I don't know. A chazan, musical key, you know, Rivka, if anyone sings, they shoot him on the spot. One, a professor from Hebrew, a Yiddish tzaddik Yisodola, married to it, I can tell you their yichas and who they come from. Her father was a Talmud, Muvak of the Chafetz Chaim, and he's a yeshiva shamani, learned in Tells. So one time they were mechaber him to daven Father Ahmed Shabbos morning, he sang Kel Adon. Yudah, he never came back to Ol Rivka. He sang Kel Adon. And then open Orthodox leaders have begun introducing new egalitarian reform in the synagogue. For example, the National Synagogue in Washington, D.C. is led by Rabbi Shmuel Hertzfeld, a student of Rabbi Avi Weiss. And he has initiated such reforms as women publicly reading the Megillah in front of men and women, and women serving as the makri for the shofar blowing. And I want to tell you, I was in that shul. I was in Washington, D.C. I was scholarly resident. I had no idea he invited me. I had no idea what it was. An Orthodox shul. I couldn't believe my ears. It was Shabbos, Mevachim, Rosh Chodesh. And there's a woman, had to be in her 90s, you could barely audible voice. She got up and announced the Maulid. You understand? So here it's that was in that shul. And here, Baruch Hashem, Megillah reading. Can a woman be reading Megillah to be, you know how much has been written? All right, to be motzi women, 90% of the poskim would agree. But men, women, is it the same chiyuv, etc.? And tzniut, what's going on here? Makri of shofar blowing. Wow. The slippery slope. Finally, I want two kosher edim, because what I'm going to read here, no one will believe. Reb David Lifshitz, when he picked edim under the chuppah, he would say, Zayt Mahacher B'tshuva. Picked yeshiva guys, tzaddikim, your father. Could anyone find fault with your father? And Reb David would say to him, Zayt Mahacher B'tshuva. Finally, the Jewish wedding is another object of reform. Rabbi Dov Linzer, this is the Rosh Yeshiva, obviously a series of suggestions aimed at making the wedding more egalitarian. This include a kalatish consisting of the singing and reading of the prenuptial agreement, a bride putting a talis over the groom at the bedeckin. Do you understand what I just read? You have just emasculated the feminine mystique. We cover up the woman's face with a veil. That's beautiful. That's the secret of femininity. The secret of life. The man, the woman, the attraction. All the Gemara, Yoma, Sanhedrin, chickens laying eggs. Cover up the... And she should cover up the man's face with his talus. Jack, please testify that it's written. God. And not that. And then the groom circling around the bride under the chuppah. Don't get me started. Big Rosh Yeshiva, world famous Lamdan. One of his daughters, Aliyah, married a son of a... His father's no longer alive. I taught with him many years, a Talmud of the Chazon Ish. Feminists refuse to march around them under the chuppah. Came up, had to be Masada Kedushin right away. No seven times, period. So shortly thereafter, I was being Masada Kedushin for a Talmud, and the boys, the Kollel fellas, all asked me, Rebbe, how do you explain that? Marching under the chuppah. What is the woman? Is she a slave? A shifcha? I said, watch. And I made a little speech. Minag Yisrael, from time immemorial, the kala circles around the chatan. Why? Why is this so vital and so important? Because men by nature are very self-centered. They grow up, they go to yeshiva, they go to slabatka, they learn the musar of the alt of slabatka. Gadlut adam bishvili nivra ha'olam. And a man takes himself very seriously, his achievements, his learning, his Torah, his knowledge. Now he's getting married. And we have to remind him, that lady is circling you so that you should know there's someone else in your life now. You can no longer be self-centered. You have to look up and see. And this represents the spheres of life, the periods, the commitments, the difficulties, the challenges, the achievements. Your eyes, not only on yourself, but at the lady you are taking to share your life with tonight. And I tell you, everyone was in tears. The men, the women. And then they asked me, Rebbe, is there any source for what you said? No, I think I can never shtick. But excuse me, because you were influenced by the modern world. You got to read your Rabbi Breuer. Are you related by any chance to him? How does it work out? We probably are related through my son-in-law, the Samuels. I come from, you know, big grandchildren, very big Yekesh Yichis. Your sister, all right, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. But Yutaka don't walk around at all. Says 1 minute, three times. But he wants the chatan should walk around. Wow.
My wife used to say that's the best thing you ever did.
The best thing that?
I never did.
Okay, Kanein Hara. My wife walked around, no big deal. The rug. But I think when my wife walked around, if I'm not mistaken, and Yitzhak, maybe you can correct me, her mother and father walked with her. Today they walk around only with the women walk, the mother-in-law, right, Beseda, whatever way it works out, it works out. But this great rug, his daughter got married and did not walk around at all. And I asked him, I don't want to mention his name because you'll all recognize it, I asked him, Chaim Yankel, my high, feminism, and he looked down, My dear students, we have more to go, but time is upon us. To reiterate, first of all, I want to thank everyone for coming and all those listening, and you keep the Rebbe alive, kicking and doing, producing. So what do we see? You see, it's very sad and it hurts me, but this is what happened. And people are entitled to their opinion. This is part of life. This bechira chavshit. After the incident with the Rav, there's no question Rabbi Rachman went more public. And quoting Blue Greenberg and encouraging Jaffa, and then you take it further. And in no way do I want to imply that Rabbi Emanuel Rachman would agree with everything that's happened in Chobevei Torah. But you see, this way of thinking, this movement, it gave birth to Chobevei Torah, and it gave birth to these men, by the way, more than the women. If you notice, the women in their quotes are much more edel and much more elich. By nature, women are more religious. I've given shirm on this. There are reasons why. But you see what we create. And we're caught in the quagmire. We live in two worlds. We can't help it. We all live in two worlds. It's, even in Meir Sharim today, the big Western world gets in. It's a global village. What can we accept and what can't we accept? And with the Israeli army, my example is very serious because this is mamish. Our lives depend upon these decisions. You don't know what a tank is, what a plane, artillery, what's involved. Women in the army, all right, intelligence, the computer division, intelligence. If women feel they want to go in, they're endless. And I have one granddaughter-in-law, a Satma Chassid, who's also a Talmud of mine, almost had heart failure when I showed him the picture of the Sheva Brachas. She was in uniform, was during the last war. Remember the picture? She's an officer, and there she is in uniform with her officer's bars and her hair covered down to here. And he looked at the picture. He said, Rebbe, how can this be? He said, I said, this is the reality. Baruch Hashem, Ashreinu Shezachim. Can I her? By the way, you should know that the army pleaded with her. She's a very bright girl. I taught her mother in Michlala before you were born. A very bright girl. And the army pleaded with her to remain in Tzva Keva. But she's getting a PhD now from Tel Aviv U, and she's a mother of children. So she's very, very fulfilled in what she is doing. Where do we go from here? Yitzchak, you've heard the name Reb Moshe Feinstein? Okay, that's where we pick up next week. Rabbi Rachman and Reb Moshe, the interconnection and the division. And then a few words on where we stand today, post-Rabbi Rachman, the new book that has come out, and then we move in to Rabbi David Hollander and Rabbi Louis Bernstein. And it's not heavyweight. That already is a lot lighter, but Rabbi David Hollander ties in, who can help me? Rabbi Moshe Scherer. They were brothers-in-law. So we're going to have to explore who their father-in-law was. Very fascinating material.
I just published a book of the writings of Leonid Streamer. So I think it's Cohen.
I think the book you're referring to is only partially his writings. It's could be. I'll quote the book. Tell me when next week I quote something. Let me know. Now I want to show you something. There's a word that you don't know in English. This is called the freebies. People give me things. I don't like to throw anything out, so I'm going to pass it on. But first, I want to explain to you. This lady is married to my student from the Kollel, the famous Rabbi Seth Farber. This is Michelle Cohn Farber, a woman at Tzadeket, a mother, I think, five children. So anyway, she's the one who organized. Your wife went to the Siyum HaShas for Women. Who organized it? This is the lady. Right, she's the first lady to start learning Daf Yomi, or maybe the first one publicly and organized the Siyum HaShas. So they interview her. This is from Makor Rishon a week ago. They interview her. D'mut shemanika lach hashra'ah. Simple English. Who's the individual who inspires you. You know what she answers? Harav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, who haya poreitz derech bakach, sheshileiv bein orthodoxia l'madenia, v'salal et haderech l'nashim rabot liyot chelek mehasiach hachilchati. And this little quote is exactly where we're at. Torah and the modern world. The Rav, yes, teaching women. It's not the first one. The Chafetz Chaim began. But beautiful interview. This article appeared in Besheva last week. It's all about this class exactly. Kol Isha, the woman, her quest. What can we do? Where does she go? And it's basically about Rav Mordechai Eliyahu's daughter and son, the whole organization of women who are trying to find a good synthesis between Torah Hashem Tamima and modern life. If you know who Rav Mordechai Eliyahu was, you can understand already where we're at. Can you hand me that? If anyone wants, again, it's in Hebrew. It's Rav Yosef Mizrahi. He's not allowed to enter England. The Chief Rabbi Asad has ended England because he criticized Chief Rabbi Mirvis on his statement on homosexuality, which wound up the biggest machloket in the world with the Seam Shas, when the Rabbi of England disinvited the Chief Rabbi to come to the Seam Shas. Anyway, it's worth listening to him. He's been put in cherem. I think he's oversexed, and I think he's over, I don't know what word to use. He's oversexed and over gehenim. If I would had to become frum from his lectures, I would run away like a Chinaman from China today. But I'm going to quote him. I'm going to work him in to Reb Menashe Klein. We're dealing next Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem, with answering machines on Shabbos. I'm going to work him in to the lecture. This was given out to everyone at the Seam Hashas in Israel in English. I guess it's in America and here. And Charlie, your nephew, is mentioned. Page 47. Pass this to Dr. Hexner. Yitzchak, this is your difficult day. This is quite an interesting story. Someone sent me a PDF from academia website. A few weeks later, Sherry, my right hand, gets an email that you took one thing out of it. We have another book that you might be interested in. Fertility and Jewish Law by Ronit Ishai. Feminist Perspectives on Orthodox Responsa Literature. Yitzchak, it's over 300 pages. No. I want you to go through it with a tooth comb. You don't know how much I suffered with this volume. First of all, you should know the authoress. If she would walk in, we would be obligated to stand up for her. Talmida, she has 5 children, happily married, from Talmida Chachama, graduate of Bar Ilan, the Rackman Institute, etc., etc. She is learned. She takes a sugya zikin learning. This is not a small matter. And wow, she understands the heartbeat of Shelut and Shuvat. The other part of it is, she gives you the feminist approach. And I don't know what she agrees with, by the way. But you should see what some of these Orthodox feminists have to say. We control the women with the laws of tzniut. Birth control. All the rabbanim are concerned with is that the men should get their degree. The whole shaila of delaying marriage or birth control until you finish education. Why not be concerned with the women? You follow? And goes on and on. You have to see the difference of opinion. All right, let me know your reaction. This article Well, we'll talk about this next week when we deal with the book. Here is a very interesting news. Baltimore Rabbi Chosner's next executive officer, Rabbi Moshe Hara, is now going to be the executive vice president of the OU. You have to say he's a fabulous individual. I taught his sisters. I know him. I spoke in his shul. You're dealing with an Eretz Yisrael graduate who really has embraced and synthesized Torah Hashem and the modern world. He's a perfect choice for the OU. This is modernity affecting a slam dunk proposal from people. He proposes to his wife in the middle of a basketball game at Madison Square Garden. And how he got it, with how they let him do it. I have a friend, he's my age, a survivor, saved from Hitler by, what was the name of the Hungarian, Waldheim?
Wallenberg.
Wallenberg saved, Mamish saved him and his family. And he proposed to his wife on a hockey at a hockey game. They put in the scoreboard, Phyllis, will you marry me, Ivan? Kanein Hara, they're still married 60 years later. This is from my Talmud, Steve Gross. There's now a new star in basketball. We can't, we don't have to eulogize today, but this is a new star, Zion Williamson. And my student writes to me, it's good to hear the word Zion on NBA highlight clips. All right. This is on the Holocaust. With you. I was here 2 weeks ago. Very fascinating articles on postcards from Auschwitz, what has survived, and victims of the final march. Bloomberg, anti-Semitism rearing its ugly head. Vladimir Putin's new orchestra, and the analysis, the New York Times, and it's happened before our eyes. We have a new dictator in Russia, but he has to do it in a way that's acceptable. In other words, you can't have more than two terms, so different titles, fabulous. And we Jews are very fortunate because Putin should live ad viat Mashiach Tzidkenu ad viat baklal. You all know his life story that I've told you. Here he is coming back from Israel and telling Rabbi Lazar about how meaningful his visit was to Israel. Here's the Rebbe, once again, my Talmud, Rabbi Nochum Zashak, who's now an official historian in Chabad. He writes about the Rebbe's relationship with Professor Cyril Dumm. I knew him. I taught his daughter. I knew him. If you ever wanted to meet a giant of Torah and Mada, it was Professor Dumm. Very, very interesting. This brought back memories that it's beyond it. I don't know how many remember the 60s. Chief Rabbi of Moscow visited, and he spoke in public, and they shouted him down that he cooperates with the communist government. And here, they were so stupid to do that. The man was a servant, was a slave. His life was in danger. The chazan they sent with him was a KGB agent who watched every move. Here he is with the Rebbe and their whole conversation and the Rebbe giving him encouragement. Here, Pope Francis replaces conservative Archbishop of Philadelphia. And by the way, the article is by Jason Horowitz and Elizabeth Diaz, so it's evidently one New York Times article, one Jew and one Catholic Puerto Rican. Very fascinating. The new Pope is a Reform Jew. It's unbelievable. He's reforming Catholicism, and he's getting rid of all the conservatives. This is interesting. This is Yaakov Peri, who was the head of the Mossad when he went to see the Rebbe and his relationship with the Rebbe. This is the New York Times investigative reporting Saudi Arabia and their deep connection with 9/11 and how American government and American state, etc., they don't want this information to surface. They don't want to harm the relationship. And Achron, Achron, Chaviv, I have to say, and you know it hurts me that I battle with some of my colleagues. They're still fighting the Hasidim. Gentlemen, I'm a Litvak. I was born a Litvak. I come from Kovna, Vilna. My Zayde used to say, Gedenkst, I Zayde is from Vilna. Yes, my Zayde was from Vilna, learned in Volozhin Yeshiva, and in America he could quote Gemaras by heart, and I think he went to shul. What did I tell you? Maybe Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, perhaps some Chas Torah, I don't. And my other Zayde, who never learned in any yeshiva, and then all he knew was Yiddish, and I once asked him, you came to America when you were 16, 17, how come you don't know Russian? So he told me, "Min not gedaf kennen in Russis, niyet und da und ze shelten," and know how to curse them in Russian, which came in very handy for me in Riga, if you read carefully Washington. So, but all his years in America, he and his, my grandmother, who I never met actually, she died when I was a year and a half, her picture hangs in my office, they were never Mechalel Shabbos all the years in America. But we have to make our peace with the Chassidim. They daven Shelo Bezman, that's very bad. We have to influence them. Maybe we can have influence. They should clean up the act. But they're here to stay, and they're good Jews. See, so Chabad plays a role. That's what people don't understand. Yafa Yischacha cries when seeing Chabad Shaliach. He helped me before anyone else helped me. This is Chabad. They're all over the world. I don't know when they have time to learn, time to daven, but they're there to help any Jew. El Al has a problem. A plane is stuck. They need kosher food. They call the local Chabad Shaliach. You have to give credit. This poor girl, all right, not so poor, stupid girl. You know, she's American, you know that. It's not Israeli-American. Her native, she was taken to America when she was 2 years old, I believe. Lived in New Jersey. They don't say where. I'd love to know if she ever set foot in Teaneck. And they're from Rehovot, and her street language and school language was English. Her English is perfect. You even hear a slight American accent in her Hebrew, which she spoke in the house. But all right, to travel with drugs, that's a tremendous problem. All right, we have to be mechanech. My children, my grandchildren tell me all over the army there were drugs, all over the army. They were nachal charedi, many of them. Drugs, shmugs, so I, Baruch Hashem, I raised good grandchildren outside of a little liquor, and now they grow older with children, with responsibility. I can't even give them liquor. It's not Shabbos, not Kiddush. They've grown up. All right, I want to thank everyone, and until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya. Okay. Jack, any questions?
Jack, you have to leave.
My passengers are in a hurry. Any questions? My father got yelled at by the rabbis. A little boy. I had the story. I didn't understand what it meant. My father and my parents went to a wedding in New York.